The Tua Tagovailoa playlist has begun on the show today, baby.
Garbage.
Whoever wears the orange jersey at Dolphins practice gets to choose the playlist. Yesterday, Uno was in charge of the aux cord. And we built this city by Starship. This song was on his playlist. You know, like the playlist, Crowder, you kind of nailed it yesterday. Like, I think what you said was he's going to play a little bit of everything to satisfy everybody and some pop music and like one rap song.
Top 100. Let's make everybody like me. Yeah. I love Tua. You hate Tua, Solon. I love Tua, but yeah.
I don't hate Tua.
His playlist is garbage.
Who was the Lion King song for?
What was it, like, Be My Brother or something? That's like the friend.
No, My Brother, like that song. Who's that for?
It's for, like, team camaraderie. It's lame.
It's lame. Definitely that song. A little cutesy.
The whole playlist is lame.
Yeah, but I like that. You know, whenever Tua gets to the podium, we've heard this a couple times. Crowder, I've mentioned it. Whenever Tua gets to the podium. Uh-oh.
Tuda?
And
what's his name?
Tuda? Tuda.
Whenever he gets to the podium. And he hits you with a brother. He hits you with that, like, brother. You know he's about to. He's whatever he's saying at that moment. It's real. Like he's not doing coach speak, QB speak. Like when he hits you with a brother, he's being just as genuine as possible. I like that. You know, he's speaking to his brothers. You know, I like that. I really do. I like the camaraderie. I love it.
Yeah, we built this city. I always wanted a brother. Pour some sugar on me. Shake it. Green light. And here I am. Like, people don't listen. People don't listen to all that. He's doing that for everybody. It's strategic. It would be T.I., Pastor Troy. That's it. Maybe a little young Dro if I was on there because I'm from Atlanta. He tries to make everybody happy.
Shake It is actually not a bad, like, if you're going to go some top 100, it's not top 100 anymore, obviously, but like in its day, Shake It by Metro Station, I'm okay with that one. That's like one of those throwbacks that's not really a throwback, but still a throwback.
Crowder's face as Appel's uttering that entire statement was just excellent. Here's what's weird. Tua, what's Tua? 28, right? Something like that. 28, 29. Tua, let me double check here. He's 27. Younger.
27? I must say younger. He's been in the league 5 years.
Yeah. Why is Tua's playlist closer to Hawk style of music? Like that's what's surprising to me. There was a lot of, like, if you asked Hawk to put together a playlist for Dolphins practice, I think him and Tua would have had like three of the same songs chosen. It's just bizarre, you know? Like, and he went with We Built This City by Starship as we open up the show there. Just like, it's like he typed in best 80s hits and the first song that popped up, he's like, that one. That's the one that I want.
Yeah.
He's just missing some Hall & Oates.
You're the orange jersey guy. Okay, play what you want to play because you're in charge. What were the fans like? What were the coaches like? What were the O-line like? What were the D-line like? What were the Let me really break this down to... No, play what you listen to. I don't even think he likes music.
The Dolphins had their first padded practice today, gentlemen, and I wish we could talk about their first padded practice without addressing injuries and injury concerns, but unfortunately, that is not the case. The Miami Dolphins already very, very thin in the secondary, already very much dealing with injuries, and today it appears they have lost safety Ashton Davis. We don't know the severity of the injury, but it wasn't good. Everybody was reporting on it immediately. Walked off the field, had a limp, couldn't really put pressure on his left foot. And then a lot of people, I saw an Omar Kelly tweet, a lot of people just came over and were comforting him, right? Like they were consoling him, which typically isn't a good sign if a lot of your teammates are coming over to console you. There was a cart that was brought out, but he was able to get off the field without the cart. But it was, from what I read in the Miami Herald, about an hour ago, Barry Jackson's notes, along with Omar Kelly and C. Isaiah Smalls, it was a non-contact injury. It's what they wrote, it appeared to be a non-contact injury. He came out, he was on crutches, and he had a boot on his left foot. So that is not a good sign for the Miami Dolphins.
No, that's terrible, too. In the secondary, and he was supposed to start. He was slated to be the strong safety.
Yeah, Minka.
Be the three, so.
Yeah.
It's they're going to have to do some.
It has the feelings of. Sorry, Carter, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I have to do some dealing on this trade wire or something because they got to get some secondary players in here.
Yeah, it has the feelings of what this is, what the third DB that's already gone down, if you include Kader Kohou in this, which, yeah, as we talked about yesterday, seems like it might be a little less severe. But it's never a good thing when you're a week and a half into camp and we're already talking about a second potential season-ending injury in the secondary, which is the thinnest position that they have.
Yeah.
And then you mix that with Melifonwu Ife, who is dealing with some injury. I don't even know what the injury is. I don't know if there's been any update on that today. But
I didn't know he was hurt.
It's an undisclosed injury. The last I read, it's not supposed to be like a serious injury, I don't think. But he's not practicing. So, like, I mean, look, man, there's a lot of good notes coming out of Dolphins camp. We're going to get to them today. By the way, we're going to talk with Aronde Gadsden a little bit later because there was a tweet that I'm going to read to you here regarding Tanner Connor's comments from Barry Jackson. But it's hard to ignore this when it's happening to the position group, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're all most concerned about, which is a secondary.
Yeah, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. 100%, yeah. The secondary, the O-line, I think we have high hopes for. Because of Patrick Paul, because what's his name? Savaneu, whatever the hell his name
Jonah.
Is. The left guard. Go Jonah. Okay, I'm gonna go Jonah. Yeah. Drafting Jonah. Patrick Paul's a big old dude. We're gonna, you know, see what happened. We brought in the new center. But yeah, the secondary. I said it, and you can praise Kader Kohou. Storm Duck was down the other day as well. But like, yeah, there's no receiver looking on the schedules, looking at the Dolphins and saying, "Damn, I got Kohou and Duck." It's just not happening. Well, Minka's an all-pro.
Minka's an all-pro safety. Crowder, that and you don't want to disclose any names, which I understand. I'm not going to try to pry it out of you, but you said you were talking to an NFL player out on the West Coast, and he mentioned that he doesn't know a single player on the Dolphins secondary. Was that what happened
on
yesterday?
The West Coast? I made it broad because I didn't want to narrow it down. But I was in LA yesterday. I flew the red eye today. We're in Carolina and Atlanta this weekend. But there was a guy that is a very successful receiver, and he was like, "Who's the corner for the Dolphins?" And it wasn't even like nasty. Like I didn't pry it out of him. I was like, "I'm in Miami. I cover the Dolphins." So it's just you know that Sauce Gardner's in New York. You know that Jalen Ramsey's in Pittsburgh. You know those guys. Like this guy was kind of like, "Who's down there? Who's that corner down there?" And I had to explain it to him, and I just don't think that was a good sign.
We got Storm Duck. You ever heard of Storm Duck? Yeah, we got him. We got Darth Kader, a great nickname. You got to let him know, Darth Kader, Storm Duck.
Who's the white boy you like?
Oh, don't get me started on Ethan Bonner. I don't want to talk about Ethan Bonner.
It's Tanner Connor and Ethan Bonner season. And we're getting the Tanner Connor content, but there's not much on the Ethan Bonner front. I'm a little concerned.
Well, trust me, it's there. If you read any of the stock ups, stock downs, or the reports from camp, but it's not because writers want to talk about Ethan Bonner. It's because there's nobody else available right now to play in the secondary for the Dolphins. So you're just getting Ethan Bonner content, and it drives me absolutely insane.
Solana. Has there been a stock up, stock down since Ethan Bonner has been with the Dolphins that hasn't included him in the stock up during training
but
camp?
That's my whole point, Appel. I don't know if you're familiar, but I've ranted against Ethan Bonner. It started last year, game day uncensored, because Tobin has this idea of the intangibles that Ethan Bonner brings. And Jalen Ramsey made some ridiculous comment last year that Ethan Bonner was he's a dog. And then I think it was Jalen Waddle last year in training camp. It was like the second week of training camp, and he's like, "Nobody's had a better camp than Ethan Bonner." So I was like, okay, all right, Ethan Bonner sees it. Maybe he'll get some playing time. And he did not get playing time last year. It was all bogus. It's just things that they're saying about a guy And it's just nonsense, because if somebody really impressed that much in camp for the second consecutive year, this would be year three, and they continue to talk about Ethan Bonner and they continue to talk about the upside and the promise of a guy, at some point, the coach, Anthony Weaver, would have said, let's give him a shot. And you know why they didn't give him a shot? Because clearly it was all BS. He wasn't ready to be an NFL player. He's not ready to be an NFL player. And we're doing the same thing, spinning our wheels with Ethan Bonner. And I'm sure he's a nice guy. Nothing personal against Ethan Bonner. But don't talk to me about a guy for three consecutive years if he doesn't even get the opportunity to take a rep on the defensive end when you were limited last year with healthy bodies on the defensive end. Like, they took guys off the field before they went to him. Off the street, before they went to him.
I can't wait for you and I to be down on the field after the Dolphins win the Super Bowl thanks to an Ethan Bonner interception. The confetti's flying, and you have your Brad Marchand moment with Ethan Bonner on the field after the Dolphins win the Super Bowl. It's going to be a magical time.
Mark this tape. Crowder, mark this tape. If the Dolphins win a Super Bowl this year and Ethan Bonner has an interception in the Super Bowl, I will quit sports media for the rest of my life. Boom. Like, I feel very I will quit sports media for the rest of my life. You'll never hear from me. I'll delete Instagram. I'll delete Twitter. You will never hear another heat take from me. I'll never talk about Drew Smith again for the rest of my life, Crowder. It'll be done. I'll be done if Ethan Bonner catches an interception in the Super Bowl for the Miami Dolphins.
Let me break something to you guys. There's not many Jason Sehorns out there. There's not many Mike Allstotts out there. Mm-hmm. There's not many Christian McCaffreys out there. Mm-hmm. You have to pick and choose your white skill positions that you're going to ride with. And mm-hmm. I don't know if Ethan's one of them.
Not the way I anticipated starting today's show with a Mike Allstott reference, but here we are.
Boy, hey, Mike Allstott could tote that thing now. Mike can tote that thing, boy. I hit Mike one time. I said, oh, you solid, huh, big man?
I love Mike Allstott because he had like the big neck pad coming out of his pads, you know, like the one that would cover his neck, which Crowder, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong. Did that actually do anything, or was it more of like, cause nobody wears that anymore. You don't see a single player with like that big neck pad sticking out of the back of their pads.
Cowboy collar. I wore one in high school, college, and the NFL. It stops stingers cause it stops your head from snapping back when you,
Really?
Yeah. Well, back when you're allowed to hit people helmet to helmet, it would stop your head from snapping back and getting stingers. So that's why I wore it because, you know, I was a helmet to helmet type guy. It's probably because that's why I can't remember anybody's name now. But yeah, it did. It stops your head from snapping back and lowers concussion rates.
Huh. I love the look of it. It is, you just look like a football player if you've got that the neck brace or the whatever you call it on. I think more players should wear it now simply because it looks better. It makes you look like a better player.
Yeah, because in college, I wore, it's called a butterfly. It was one of the cute ones that went way up and like stuck out of your jersey. And then I'm, you know, it looks kind of lame and makes you look bulky. And then I got to the Dolphins and Zach wore a cowboy collar. Mm-hmm. I was like, if Zach Thomas can wear a cowboy collar, I can wear a cowboy collar. This is pretty cool, you know.
Bring God back watches out for collar, me. Man. Yeah,
I'm a Christian. Cowboy That's collar. God.
G-O-D. all right, we have a lot to get to today. So today, we're going to talk Dolphins. Aronde Gadsden will join us in the 3 o'clock hour. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Kyle Seeloff from the Marlins TV broadcast. The Marlins are playing well, even though they kind of got their asses handed to them last night. And we got the MLB trade deadline coming up. There's also some other stuff going on in the world of baseball that Appel brought to my attention a couple minutes ago that I'd like to talk with Kyle. And Inter Miami tomorrow is going to play in the League's Cup. I'm still upset Leo Messi got suspended, so we're going to do a little Inter Miami update with Chris Whittingham in the 4 o'clock hour. But today's National Lasagna Day. Yesterday, and it's National Chicken Wing Day. Yesterday,
don't leave me out. don't celebrate Ethan Bonner and Mike Allstott and leave out Chicken Wing Day.
Best chicken wings. Go. Best chicken wings right now.
Most consistent. I told y'all, man. I'm not trying to. Wingstop. You can get Wingstop around the nation, and it's going to be Wingstop.
But are their chicken wings good, or are their sauces good?
Oh, their chicken wings are good. Delicious.
Are they?
Fried right. Yeah.
Okay.
fry them up nice. Sports grill, you brought up sports grill. Sports grill's wings are delicious.
That was Omar Kelly. I had brought it up to you guys. He had tweeted, and I agree with him, like, full stop. Sports grill down in Miami-Dade County, to me, best chicken wings by far. Special grilled, messed me up, man. Just love those.
I don't know if Brew's Room, I know it closed off Palm. Brew's Room's has some good-ass wings. Mm-hmm. There's some good wings out there, man. It's a little hillbilly spot up here called Billy's Tavern off 84 in Pine Island. They got some great wings, but I'm the only black person that's ever been there.
I just enjoyed some bone-out wings at Hooters with a hawk for lunch today.
Crazy, man. That's crazy.
Well, you don't like wings then.
I do like wings.
Hey, who calls a boneless wing a bone-out wing?
Yeah.
That's what they're called.
A bone-out wing?
Yeah.
There was no bone in
wing, bone-out wing.
But there's no bone in it. It's like you're not removing the bone. It's a chicken. It's a chicken breast cut up.
I don't know. They take the bone-in wing. They take the bone out, and there you get my boneless wings.
No, you're just eating chicken breast, bro. That's all you're eating. You're eating a chicken breast. But if I order a chicken breast, I don't go, can I have the bone out chicken, please? No, you're getting a chicken breast, bro.
I do.
Yeah. chicken breast nuggets. Tell them you want chicken breast nuggets.
Apparently, Appel has like some big reveal on lasagna that we got to get to today.
It'll disappoint.
Jimmy, I can't wait. Jimmy yesterday was at jury duty. And that's what I really wanted to get to in this first segment, Jimmy at jury duty. However, I can't take my eyes off of Jimmy for the second consecutive Tuesday. At the radio station, we do something called Jersey Tuesday. And when I say we, it's just me and Jimmy because nobody else and Dan Day participates in Jersey Tuesday, partly because Hawk and Crowder are never in the studio. Neither am I. And Tobin hates me. So the only people who participate are Dan Day and Jimmy. Jimmy, for the second consecutive Tuesday, has taken to basketball jersey, so like a sleeveless jersey, but he's going t-shirt under the jersey. And I can't let this go, Jimmy. First of all, what jersey is that? What are you repping today?
The Florida Hammerheads. There used to be a team that played in the Miami Arena, a roller hockey league.
What did you just say?
and is that a vintage?
Yeah, it's vintage.
Is that a vintage jersey, or did you buy that like recently? That's a vintage jersey.
No, I just bought this.
Okay, all right. So you're re-upping your gear.
An MDC basketball shirt jersey.
Right, go Sharks. So you're sticking to this style, huh? You're going t-shirt underneath the jersey, Jimmy. You're sticking to it.
Yes, I am.
Jimmy, sun's out, guns out, baby.
Yeah. Come on, man. By the end of the show, I need Jimmy without that shirt underneath. Just bicep, tricep. Show us a little of the hamburger meat with that deep V jersey. Come on, Jimmy. By the end of the show, go take off that undershirt. Come on. Put him out.
No problem.
Jimmy, when's the last time you did a curl, like with a dumbbell? Bicep curl.
It's been a while.
Hey, Jimmy, I gotta hear this jury duty story because you never answer questions. I don't know how you did jury duty.
Crazy, man. But remember the weird part was he told me I got selected, and then 7 minutes later he texted me, never mind, they got confused with Garcia's. Which, like, what do you mean? Everybody's awarded a number. What we're gonna get into it. I cannot wait to hear about how that all evolved throughout yesterday's jury duty experience for Jimmy. Is that like private? Is he not supposed to? I mean, we're gonna force him to talk about it. But could he get in trouble?
He wasn't on a case or anything where like you can't discuss details of the case. So you can talk about the process.
Yeah. Okay.
You got fired. You can get fired and talk about why you got fired. They didn't choose him. Sorry, Jimmy. You're a great dude, but I wouldn't choose you for a jury. It'd be a hung jury every time. You don't make decisions.
I wouldn't choose me either.
can we try and track down the other Garcia that you were mixed up with and get them on the show?
Like, when have you ever heard of that? Like, we're at the federal courthouse. They mixed us up. They meant the other Garcia.
Blame the lawyers.
Do you remember, Crowder, just this is so random. There's a segment. I don't even remember what segment it is. It's a best of segment where something was happening. Maybe it was like when your tooth fell out. And I'm not joking. Like, I think that that might have been the segment. But in the midst of all that happening, like one crazy thing was happening, Jimmy just randomly goes, "Oh, look, my cousin's here at the studio."
Yes.
And we're like, oh, like you invited your cousin? And he's like, no. And we're like, well, why don't you go say, like, that's weird. There's nobody here. It was like a Friday. Why would your cousin just randomly be walking around the studio? And then he left to go track down his cousin. And then was like, no, that wasn't my cousin.
That wasn't my cousin.
But then it ended up being his cousin. At the end, we found out it actually was his cousin who was there doing some business at the radio station, but somehow didn't think, neither of them, cousins, to contact one another. It just, Jimmy, you are.
Yeah, but
I didn't even know he was going to show up.
Yeah, you need to get some Ginkgo Bilco or some ginseng or something, man. Yeah. You got a weird life.
Yeah, man.
Ginkgo Bilco?
I think you're talking about Ginkgo Biloba, right? Ginkgo Biloba?
Yeah, is that still something?
I don't know.
No one knows what you're talking about.
Ginkgo Biloba.
Yeah, Ginkgo Biloba. Like
it's a supplement. It's supposed to be great. Mm-hmm. It's
Janko
a trend.
Jeans?
You know what? I was arguing about these trends yesterday because I get on diet trends, but these trends, have you heard of tart cherry?
No.
Huh?
Out in California right now, it's tart cherry everywhere. It's supposed to help you sleep. It's supposed to be an antioxidant. They have tart cherry drinks and juices and shots. And it's, I don't know if tart cherry hasn't got to the East Coast yet, but in Cali, there's tart cherry crap everywhere. And I was telling people, this is just great marketing. No one knows what a tart cherry is, but now it helps me sleep. Let me take this before you get on the plane. I'm not drinking that juice. No, I'm not. Tart cherry.
How can you dismiss it if you didn't try it?
Because, so, all that God created in 2025, now they figured out that tart cherry is going to make me sleep, Josh. Like, I'm sitting there, and I'm literally arguing with PR people from the Rams. No, man, take a case. I'm not taking a case of tart cherry juice anywhere. Leave me alone.
Stay woke. They're just trying to unload those cases onto you because they don't want it anymore. They're done with it. They're just trying to get it out of their hands.
Tart cherry. I was a realist. I was the only one in California that didn't put this tart cherry on a pedestal. No, it's cherry juice. Get out of here. You know what you can make with cherry juice? I know. It's called the Shirley Temples. Shirley Temples. Only thing good about cherry juice is Shirley Temples.
Amen. That is a take I can get behind, man. Amen. Amen.
Somebody said the on the text line that tart cherry has been around for years for gout.
Oh, I'm gonna have gout for sure when I get old.
Yeah.
So maybe you could have gotten ahead of the game with some tart cherry drink.
I'm gonna just deal with my gout.
You look like gout.
I got upset for a second. I don't know if I should, but that was a hell of a insult. You look like gout?
Yeah, you just look like gout. How'd you like to see the Zac Brown Band at the Sphere in Las Vegas this December? It is very easy to enter, ladies and gentlemen. So pay attention. Log on to the Odyssey app. Listen to WQAM for 1 hour. For more chances, listen every day. And you could be the winner. The winner receives round-trip airfare. We were talking about this yesterday. Pretty cool. To Las Vegas. You get two tickets to see Zac Brown Band. And today is going to be a tough day. And a two-night stay at the Venetian Resort Las Vegas, which is directly connected to the Sphere. Do not miss out. Log on to the Odyssey app now. This is a national contest. For more info, go to odyssey.com/Zac. That's Z-A-C. Special thanks to the Messina Touring Group. I had a lunch meeting in downtown Miami, and I zipped back home. And I want to take a break here because Kyle Seeloff is going to join us. But, bro, you ever get caught in a traffic jam and you got to pee? Like, bro, I almost peed myself in the car because I'm just sitting in a traffic jam. There's nowhere to go. I chugged water. all morning trying to get hydrated. And it was one of those things where I'm like trying to have a spiritual moment with myself to keep my bladder from making a very, very tough life decision, which would have made for a messy decision. That ever happened to you?
No, you don't pee in bottles.
All right, I can't do this with you. Headlines, really quickly, brought to you by Doral Key. I can't have the peeing conversation with the guy who willingly peed on himself throughout his entire NFL career. I forgot. Yeah, that's my mistake, everybody. My mistake. We'll move forward from this. We won't revisit.
To pee into a water bottle, you pee in the water bottle. Everybody knows that. There was reports about them that people, they call them pee missiles, that people throw the water bottles full of pee out their window, and sometimes they bounce up and hit other cars.
My mistake, everybody. That's on me. I got to have a better governor for who I'm talking to about peeing. Choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory, like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at Doral Kia. The Marlins are back at it today. They're in St. Louis. Kyle Seeloff will join us in the next segment. Tomorrow, Inter Miami, they're going to play in the League's Cup as well. We'll get back into some Dolphins notes later on in the show in the next hour. We'll take a break here, though. We're going to talk some fish, MLB trade deadline, some other stuff happening in Major League Baseball as well, right after this break on the Hockman, Crowder, and Solana show.
I peed into a grocery bag.
This is Hock, Crowder, and Solana.
I'm just saying that I'm Hock. We talk Tua. Hock Tua.
Kyle Seeloff, he joins us on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. He is the Marlins TV play-by-play broadcaster. The Fish, they play the Cardinals tonight in St. Louis, 7:45 p.m. first pitch out here on the East Coast. And I should remind everybody, Marlins fans especially, right now you can buy 1 month of FanDuel Sports Network and get the second month free. You don't want to miss this deal to stream the Marlins. The offer actually ends later this week, so take advantage. Just visit marlins.com/tunein for details. Kyle, appreciate you taking the time again. We haven't scared you off yet. We'll see how you feel by the end of this segment. The Fish, yesterday, they made their first move ahead of the trade deadline later this week. They acquired Matthew Etzel from Tampa Bay. They traded catcher Nick Fortes. Is this perhaps a sign of things to come? The Marlins making moves? What's kind of the feel around the team right now, as you know, we inch closer and closer to the trade deadline? Do you anticipate more moves, buyers, sellers? Is it even fair to kind of put a label on it like that?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think if you take a step back, and with the Fortes situation, I think it's pretty evident that there's a surplus of catching in the organization, and Joe Mack is obviously the prized possession that is coming up, whether it's September or next June, whenever. I mean, he's the catcher of the future. Nick Fortes served his purpose. Obviously, Jazz was traded for Augustine, who's working on his catching. So that you just had it was just a logjam of guys. So, and then you take a flyer on the young man that's 23 in AA. I think he's on the injured list right now. But I don't think it's serious or anything of that nature. So the Fortes thing, I think, I wouldn't necessarily say that's setting the stage for, like, hey, once that domino falls here, now the Marlins can get down to business by any means. And we can chat about it. But I think they're going to be very active this week. But I think that they could also be in a position where they could buy and sell at the same time. I think this team that has made up nearly 16 games in the last 6 weeks deserves the right to continue to play well and be competitive. That's not always the case when teams sell off franchise at the deadline, and we've seen it before. I mean, you sell off too many guys, it can go south in a hurry. I think every move that is made this week is going to be calculated with an eye on the future, but that future is not like 3 years down the road. It's here. It's this year. It's next year.
And Kyle, speaking of that, and the big name would be Sandy, because I think he makes four times more than the next highest paid player and all of that. Like, Sandy's the name of the Marlins. If you don't follow Marlins baseball, like, do you think Sandy will be moved? He wasn't playing well in early in the season, but he's been playing well. His last couple starts have been okay. Like, what's the Sandy situation? And you're saying it's not about the far off future, but I don't know if Sandy is the right guy for a rebuild type thing.
So I think there's a lot to unpack there, but I think it's an extremely fair question. Now, when you do talk about the price point there, Crowder, I think he's making $17 million, which in the big scheme of things, I mean, that is nothing, okay? And that's a good place to start. Now, if you asked me a week ago, I would have said, I think Cabrera is going to get traded and Sandy will not. No really rhyme or reason. It was just kind of the way I'm feeling. Now, even in the last 15, 20 minutes, I saw Jim Bowden had tweeted, out, you know, and I know this comes from agents and whatever and organizations, but, you know, the market is increasingly picking up on Sandy. I think that is interesting. Here's the way I see it. If he does get dealt, I really think Peter Bendix here has been given pocket aces and everybody else at the table is going to start bluffing, folding and raising. And I do think if Sandy gets dealt here, guys, I think he's going to get a king's ransom as if he's a number one starter, because I don't think Peter's going to settle for anything less than that. And that's understandable with a guy that, to your point, he's not getting paid a whole lot in the scope of high-end starting pitching, has multiple years of control left. When you talk about the contract situation, there's no rush to move him if you don't get what you're feeling is fair value. And hey, even if you're looking for more than fair value, you can hold on to him. You can make somebody. I guess maybe that's a long way of me saying, gun to head right now, if he has a good start tonight, I'll say he gets traded. And I think Peter Bendix does some dirty work in that trade, because I think Sandy is going to get you a haul back. That's just the way I feel about it. And I don't know if his start tonight impacts that, unless it's a real clunker. But I Peter's in the driver's seat.
Kyle, you mentioned Edward Cabrera in that answer, and you kind of alluded to it earlier as well. He's the other big name that the Marlins have available when it comes to starting pitching. Outside of like a couple other names, the Marlins probably have the two biggest names on the market as far as starting pitching goes. You can make the argument. I'm curious, though, do you think this last month, month and a half, has changed the calculus at all in how they approach this, or is Peter Bendix just kind of head down, I'm sticking to this, and not, I don't know, fooled is the right answer, but I'm not letting a good month and a half of baseball kind of change the long-term, quote-unquote long-term plan here?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think, and I have not gotten this out of anybody, but I wish I could, and this is just my feeling. Their process and this building process, and I've been told before, you can't rebuild something you never had. So they're very much building. And I know it sounds a little cliche. I think the build in this home is going up a little bit quicker than they thought, to be honest with you. I think that would be fair from watching this thing. I mean, the middle of June, you're 16 games under 500. All anybody's going to talk about is the deadline. The only thing of interest is Sandy Alcantara pitching every fifth day to see if you can trade him. And let's see how many homers Augustin Ramirez can hit. I mean, the tenor and the tone is totally changed to where, you know, it was cute last week to talk about the National League wildcard race, but five games under 500 for a team that's playing well, and there's no reason to suspect they won't continue to play well. I'm not saying they're going to the playoffs, but like, no, that's a real conversation you can have. Hey, can they win the next two games in St. Louis and continue to win series? And now they have to juggle the deadline. But the one thing I do know about Peter, and Josh, I know you know Peter as well a little bit, and obviously we chat about baseball a lot. I think he's very the best way I could put this is he and to your point, the word fooled is not the right word, but he has a plan, and I think he's very determined to make sure that he doesn't deviate from that. I think you could go back in the history of baseball and look in teams that are kind of lingering at the deadline, they panic and they're like, well, let's see if we can get in this thing. All of a sudden you trade guys you shouldn't have and you screw up the future. Peter's not going to do that, in my opinion. I think he is thrilled the way this is going. Now, the calculus that I could see changing, and you always want the best talent in return, should he trade some of these guys, to me, the return I think you see will not be like a Lizardo trade where Caba comes back. This is a guy that's far off down the road. Maybe you develop him as the long-term shortstop. I think anything you're going to get in return, number one, for Cabrera Alcantara, I think they could net you at least one major league ready piece right now that might be playing on that team in the big leagues. And then I think you're talking about other guys that are in Double A and Triple A and they're knocking on the door and they're near big league ready. I do think if there's any calculus that's changed, that's it. But we'll see. But what's fascinating about this whole thing, guys, is with Cabrera, he's under team control through 2028. Sandy Alcantara has two very team or next year and then a very team-friendly option for $17 million for a frontline starting pitcher a year and a half from now. So there's no rush, but I do think the return is going to be big if they deal both those guys.
I'll tell you what, just, you know, based on me following the Marlins now a little bit more because they've been playing much better, the tenor around the front office, specifically Bendix, has changed substantially from the start of the season to now. And obviously winning does that, I get it. But, you know, saying that you trusted Bendix in April feels a little bit different than a fan saying, I like this guy. Like, I feel like he's doing something promising. Do you feel that as well? Like, the tenor around the fan base has changed? Because, Kyle, let's be honest, you know, it would have been very easy even, you know, 6 months ago for you to strike up a conversation about the Marlins at a Ventanita in Little Havana, and they'll just check out and say, oh, but they'll sell the best players anyways. And, like, you might still get some of that, but, I mean, come on. Like, you've been on this show, a show that rarely talks baseball, four times because there's a thirst for Marlins content right now.
Sure, and I think you're correct. So, number one, I think having an honest conversation about this entire thing is what the fan base wants as well. I think as a fan, and we're all fans of a sport, it's all you want is honesty, right? And I think the Marlins have certainly started to provide that. Now, to your point, if you were to go back a couple of months ago, you might find some fans that say, I really like what Peter is doing, and I trust him. But as fans, you want to cease some of the fruits of the labor.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, you could tell me about the 23-year-old young promising shortstop in AAA all you want, but if I can't see him as a fan in the major leagues when I'm paying money for a ticket to the building every night to watch the show, you know, it's hard to have that trust. I think, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, and Josh, I know you see this stuff too. I don't remember the last time I've seen the discourse on Twitter from the Marlins fan base as excited as they have been. And I think subconsciously they're also excited about the future, seeing a lot of these guys. And look, a lot of these guys are not going to be traded. In fact, I've seen a lot of that toned down too. All the jokes that, well, they'll all be gone anyway. I actually don't see that much anymore because I think the fans, to your point, Solana, they're like, oh, you can kind of start to see what's happening here. And I think that's really cool. So I think, you know, and Peter is front facing this whole thing. So he has to fall on the sword, whether it's good or bad. And he'll get a lot of praise if this continues to go well, as he should. I think the discourse has changed around it because you're starting to see it come to fruition. You have to see success at some point. And I think it's happening quicker than they thought it would. I think for the fan base, it's happening quicker. So that's what's cool. So I do think this is all happening quickly, and I think the conversation is changing.
And Kyle, little Chan, Channing the Third, plays baseball. So I'm getting to baseball, and he can rake now. Yeah, he bats his tail off. But when you talk about baseball, like, we keep talking about Bendix, but other sports you talk about the coaches, or in baseball be the manager. We couldn't question Donnie. No one questioned Mattingly because that's Don Mattingly. Then you get Schumacher. Now McCullough's there, and we're just talking about the acquisitions. Is McCullough a great manager yet? Like you're saying, we're under 500, but does he move the needle with this organization? Because this is the first time we've seen him. And, you know, I don't really know, you know, to me, they eat sunflower seeds and yell at people. But does he move the needle? Is he a good manager?
That's a good question. I think it's a fair question. I don't know if it's too soon to say that he's a good manager, but here's what I'll tell you. This dude cares, like, a lot. Him and his staff just work every day. You know, the funny thing about baseball is the manager will never get credit when things are going well. It's like, hey, the players are playing well. You know, the other day in Milwaukee is a perfect example. The Marlins get walked off. Dane Myers was playing shallow in center field in the eighth inning. Andrew Vaughn hits the automatic double over the wall after Blake Perkins stole second to tie the game. And Clayton caught a little heat afterwards. You know, why would you play your center fielder in so far? Because that potentially was a catchable ball. Well, if there's a line drive to center field and Myers comes up with that baseball and throws out the runner at the plate to preserve a 2-1 lead, you know, that's just the decisions you have to make. But I think Clayton is doing a terrific job. You know, and besides Clayton, I tried to say this on the broadcast last night, and I don't even know if it came out the way I was thinking about it at the time. The other day when they got walked off in that game in Milwaukee, it was what, July 27th? You know, team's playing well. The bench coach and I would say a half dozen players sat in the dugout like their dog had just been killed and they were just knocked out of the playoffs, which I got to thinking, these guys care. That hurt. And as sick as it might sound, you like that. You want it to hurt. When you're playing well and you had a chance to sweep the best team in the National League, to see like the hurt, now you got to get over it and show up the next day, which was yesterday, and it didn't go well. But to me, that's where things are changing. Because when you're not playing well, you get walked off. Let's go get a hot meal, get on the plane, and go monkey around somewhere. That stung, and I thought that was nice to see. And that, to me, is a culture thing that I think you're seeing starting to change, as much as you don't want to see it. But when you see it, it's like, that hurt. That meant something. I think the meaning, and I think that comes from the coaching, to get back to your point. Hey, we're here to win, you know? And I think that's all kind of trickled down.
I think that's also part of why fans have kind of gravitated more to this team. They're seeing the acquisitions and some of the tweaks that Bendix and his coaching staff have made have success, and also they're seeing the amount of care. I'm not saying that guys who were here previously didn't, but certainly you could tell there's a different motivation between all these young guys who aren't getting paid a lot of money who are here trying to prove that they belong. Kyle, I wanted to ask you about a national story. That there are a couple of big ones, but the first one, stay in the NL East. Bryce Harper and Rob Manfred had a bit of a confrontation in the Phillies clubhouse a couple of days ago, and it related to, I guess, the earliest possible or early stages of what a CBA negotiation would be like. And Rob Manfred said the magic word, or two magic words, I guess, salary cap. And Bryce Harper responded by getting in his face and dropping an F-bomb or three. What do you make of that situation? And should we be worried about having some baseball to watch in a couple years?
Yes, because I don't think I could sit here in good conscience and try to sell you a bill of goods that it's all going to be okay. I think the scary thing is that Major League Baseball Players Association has developed the strongest union in sports. And more often than not, those guys stick to their guns. And if they say, we're not playing until you meet our needs, like the league and the owners at some point have to bow down to them. So I think that's concerning. We're obviously reaching ahead with this whole salary cap thing, which, and we were talking again, we were chatting about this the other day. A salary cap is going to affect the less than 1%ers, guys that are making 600 and 700 ridiculous million dollars. That's less than 1% of Major League Baseball. A salary cap as a fan, obviously, puts the league in a situation where there can be a lot more disparity throughout the league. And so, but what's also hard about this is that a lot, the voices that come from the inside, and if I understand this correctly, is a lot of these guys making $500, $600, $700 million, in my opinion, they're a little out of touch with reality and they're short-sighted. Because if you were working on behalf of the other players that are not going to make generational money, now don't get me wrong, if you can find a way to play for a half dozen years and make $10 million, that is life-changing, family-changing money. I understand that. But there's almost, is infighting the right word? Because you could see where the union is going to say, no, we will not. We are going to resist to a salary cap. But then you could see 700 other players being like, well, if there's a salary cap, we all stand to make a little bit more money. The league could be more competitive. If we get ourselves to the postseason, then you stand to make an even fatter paycheck if you win series and you get the. So I think there's a little bit of like the players kind of fight within themselves, and then the whole other side of what are the owners in the league going to agree to? I guess that's a really long way of saying, I think you have to be extremely concerned about what this looks like in 2 years, because that union is strong and they do not bow down to anybody. And they make sure they get their way. Do I think the sport's in too good of a spot to have a full-blown lockout? Yes. But it's hard to sit here and say right now, I'm sure they'll resolve their differences, because it certainly doesn't feel that way when 2 years in advance, that article's coming out that Bryce Harper's telling the commissioner of the league to get the bleep out of here. And they go nose to nose. That's a little concerning.
Yeah.
Is that normal, by the way? Like,
not that I'm aware of.
What? No, not the confrontation, but Manfred in the clubhouse. Like, does that happen?
Yes, I think the commissioner goes to all 30 clubhouses, if I'm not mistaken, throughout the course of the year, have conversations about where the league is at, you know, maybe update them on the national TV rights deals or something. I think his presence being felt throughout the course of the year at least once in every clubhouse is normal, or somebody that reports directly to him from the league office. The commissioner and Mr. Harper getting nose to nose and belly to belly. No, but I don't know, man. You see that stuff a year and a half, 2 years in advance. It's like, yeah, here we go again. But who knows? Maybe they'll miraculously solve their differences.
Watch the Marlins broadcast tonight. This man will be doing your play-by-play again tonight, 7:45 p.m. first pitch out here on the East Coast. A couple other things that we just don't have time to get to. But before you go, Kyle, can I get you to commit next Sunday, Jack McKeon bobblehead day, as he enters the team's Hall of Fame? We noticed that there's no cigar on the bobblehead, which makes sense. But can I get you on the TV broadcast to commit to doing the entire play-by-play with a cigar in your mouth?
Well, I have hard enough time talking as it is. So, but like, I could probably gnaw on 140 for a few innings.
Okay. I'll take that.
I can go buy one. I could gnaw on one for a couple of innings. I'm sure Jack on the broadcast, he'll have one.
Who are you doing the game with?
Tonight or this weekend?
The Jack McKeon day.
Tommy Hunt.
Okay, you and Tommy need to have a cigar in the mouth for the open and for the inning when Jack joins you on the broadcast.
That's actually a fabulous call, Josh. Your check's in the mail. That's a great idea.
Thank you.
Where can I buy cigars at, like Publix or something? Where can I go to get these?
Cigar shop.
You can't know, Kyle. It's 2025. You're not allowed to do that anymore. You can't sit around with a cigar in your mouth.
Oh, of course you can. Jack McKeon, what are you talking about? You do whatever you want. Rip a heater in there. Who cares?
The kids are watching.
Yeah. Well, tell them once in a while is okay.
Kyle Thelock, man, we appreciate you. You're kicking ass this year, and hopefully more fun baseball is ahead. Thank you.
All right, your check's in the mail as well. See you guys. See you soon.
Thanks, Kyle. Absolutely.
Kyle Seeloff, ladies and gentlemen, that inspired me. I want to start a union, salary cap and radio. Crowder, I want part of your check too, brother.
Don't want a salary cap. Oh, you want a salary cap.
I want a part of your check. We'll take a break. I'm going to reach out to my agent. More Hawkman, Crowder, and Solana coming up.
This is Hawk, Crowder, and Solana.
Is there any possibility that Billy the Marlin is a bird?